on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Great to have you with us. Thanks for listening and for taking part. And welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah, we've got lots to cover today. Tomorrow, we're expecting at 11 tomorrow, big announcement from the province. We're expecting to hear that they're going to purchase the Mount Edwards former seniors care home to house the homeless. We're learning that announcement might also include the former youth jail on the Trans-Canada Highway becoming a homeless shelter as well. That brings rise to the question about the tent city at the provincial courthouse, which you're by all the time. What would have to happen legally for the province to evict the remaining people at Tent City?
Well, it seems to me the appropriate process would be for the province of British Columbia to seek an injunction from a superior court, a superior court judge, to direct that the people occupying that property leave, or leave in a certain time period or for certain times of the day, whatever it was that they were seeking. They would serve the people with the notice of that order once it was received, and that's what would legally compel people to go.
Michael, on what grounds would an injunction be granted?
Well, the starting point is it's property. You don't have a right to go and set up your tent on somebody else's property. It's like if a group of people set up a tent on your front lawn. If you didn't want to go out and get into a struggle with them to try to physically remove them, the legal process would go to court and seek an order that they vacate your front lawn. And then if they didn't vacate the front lawn pursuant to a court order, they would be in contempt of the court order, and there could then be a process to have that enforced, to have them arrested or removed or brought to court for a contempt hearing to determine if they should be punished for failing to comply with a court order.
Why wouldn't that have happened already?
The province simply hasn't made the application yet. So I presume that decision would be a political one, wanting to have some other arrangement made so they could go somewhere. So I suspect it's just been a decision not to make that application. I was chatting with it with my colleagues the other day. My tongue-in-cheek suggestion for the problem is that we're often or can be short of people prepared to serve on juries. And if you run out of jurors, there's a process whereby a judge can direct the sheriff to go out and round up people that are near the courthouse called talisman to come and serve as jurors. You're paid $20 a day to do it. Seems to me you've got a lawn full of people who aren't doing anything else during the day. Perhaps that would be an immediate solution. We can fill up our jury pool with the people that are waiting right outside the courthouse ready to serve.
Not a great idea. Okay. So we'll see if that happens, if the injunction is not granted. But yeah, we're expecting this announcement tomorrow at 11. I will have Councillor Marianne Alto on at 11:30 to react to whatever that announcement contains. But we expect it to be a big one. And Michael, you're sort of underscoring that those facilities, optically, having those in place makes sense before. It's not a legal requirement, but makes sense for the province to do that before taking legal action to remove anybody who's sadly still wants to stay or needs to stay at Tent City.
That's exactly right. It's like if you had a person camping on your front lawn, you have no obligation to wait some period of time before going making some application to have them get off your front lawn. But in the case of the provincial government, I expect that they want to be seen to have provided a reasonable alternative so they're not accused of being unduly harsh, right? These people need somewhere that they're able to live. If they provide that alternative, it would, I suspect, give them the political cover necessary to go and make the application to say, please get off my lawn.
Do you expect that application to be made Monday?
I don't know the timing of it. As I said, there's nothing preventing that from occurring already. The provincial government isn't obliged to set up alternative places for them to go any more than you're obliged to set up an alternative place for the person camping in your front lawn to go before you make an application saying, please leave my lawn.
Okay. Let's bring Larry in. Hi, Larry. Thanks for calling. You're on CFAX.
Yeah, good morning, Pamela. And good morning to your guests. Boy, I just can't understand how the politicians in this city are so afraid of making a decent decision on a lot of things. That building down there, Mount St. Edwards or whatever it's called, used to be Helms Inn.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they move the homeless and all the problems there is right in around the legislative buildings and around the museum and stuff down there. What a mess in a school over there in that corner. I just can't believe it. Then why would we want to wreck the youth prison thing on the side of the highway? Such a valuable investment there and so on. You know, and I know one day that if they don't use it for something, they'll tear it apart. They'll sell the commercial kitchen and everything that's probably worth $1 million. They'll sell it for a giveaway price or whatever. I just can't believe the crap that's going on. You know, there's so much mismanagement. Where they would put those people is beyond me. But, you know, because there's the big problems. Some of them are got mental issues. Some of them are druggies. And some of them are just hard luck.
Thanks, Larry. We're going to cut it off there. Michael, you want to wade into that?
Well, any order is unlikely to sort of put the people anywhere. The province is free to make various services and housing available, but they wouldn't likely be ordered to go to a particular place. The likely order would be simply to vacate that place. And the state of affairs for all other public parks, following a challenge from a couple of years ago, is that people are, if they have no other reasonable place to go, free to set up a tent in a park on a temporary basis at night, but they need to pack it up in the morning. Of course, many people don't want to be doing that. And, you know, some of the structures that have now been built behind the courthouse are, you know, made of wood and aren't the sort of temporary structures that you could set up at night and take down in the morning. The alternative place, I'm not sure about the optics of using a jail as an alternative spot for homeless people, but all of those things are going to be optional places for people to go. If they choose to go there, that's up to them. The reason this thing has been delayed, it seems to me, on a political level, is that you've got this group of people concentrated into one place on a semi-permanent basis, and it's having serious impacts on the people that are surrounding it. You know, people who live across the street reported things like break-ins and fires being started and the sort of disruptions you'd imagine occurring with a large group of people setting up this sort of a camp. Those problems are reasonably localized ones, and it may well be serious issues for voters in the city of Victoria. But the provincial government is going to have broader concerns about how their response to this is viewed, which is why I suspect it's taken a little bit of time, and they want to have some other alternative they can point to politically before they made an application to have the tent city, or whatever it might be called now, vacated.
How late in the day would the province have tomorrow to seek that injunction?
Well, the usual process would be to give some notice to the people who would be affected by it, so that those people could get counsel or attend court and speak to it if they were opposing it for some reason, or to speak to what the conditions of the order might be, timeline, this sort of thing. And then there'd be a hearing, a judge would make an order, and then that would have to be served on the people affected, and they'd be given some time to abide by it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. Thank you for your insight on that one. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the sexual assault trial of disgraced broadcaster Gian Gomeshi here on Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. Stay with us.
Call us. 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. When news breaks, Victoria counts on CFAX 1070.
This is just coming into the newsroom. Police are reporting.
If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
This winter, take a break from the cold. With a trial stay at an Amica retirement community, you can enjoy the all-inclusive lifestyle and the company of new friends. Experience the comfort and convenience of our first-class dining and housekeeping services, along with our extensive wellness and vitality programs. Visit amica.ca to inquire about a trial stay at a community near you. Come in from the cold and feel the warmth of Amica.
Are you a shopping addict?
A hamburger connoisseur?
Golf aficionado?
If you answered yes or just love screaming hot deals and discounts at your favorite hangouts, you've got to download the Get in the Loop app on your smartphone. The Get in the Loop app will also get you deals on golfing, spa visits, shopping, and more. It's easy. No coupon printing or pre-purchasing required. And brand new to Get in the Loop is deals on vision care. Spend less while experiencing more with CFAX 1070 and the Get in the Loop app. Available on the App Store. You'll love it.
Look out your window. There's probably an F-Series truck nearby. Because for the last 50 years, it's been the best-selling line of trucks in Canada. Lease a 2016 5-liter F-150 XLT Supercrew 4x4 for $199 every 2 weeks at 0.99% APR for 36 months with $24.95 down. Plus, get $750 in bonus cash on F-Series. There's one word for the value you get with this truck. Undisputed. Details at ford.ca/incentives.
For over 25 years, Palmera Jewelers has provided beautiful jewelry in Victoria. And once a year, they have a sale. It's a special event, and it's on now. So why not drop by? You'll save on almost all in-stock merchandise. That means engagement rings, wedding bands, pearl, colored stone and diamond jewelry, Simon G, silver jewelry, and Tudor watches. The annual sale, on now through February 28th at Palmera Jewelers. Family owned at the corner of Fort and Broad. Online at palmerajewelers.com.
Does this sound familiar?
Honey, it's your turn to clean the bathroom. Honey? Honey?
If cleaning your shower walls is scaring you off, then Island Marble has the solution. They offer groutless designer panels that look like tiles without the maintenance or issues associated with grout. And they're completely mold and mildew resistant. Yet another bathroom innovation from Island Marble. Endless possibilities. Learn more at islandmarble.ca. Locally owned and operated Camino Carpets and Flooring. You may have known them as Camino Carpets for years, but you should get to know them as Camino Carpets and Flooring. They do more than just carpets. They do all types of flooring. Camino offers free estimates and guaranteed installations and will help you find the right flooring for your home or business. They take pride in their work, so you can be proud of your floors. Camino Carpets and Flooring, an accredited member of the Better Business Bureau. 3950 Quadra Street across from Lumber World.
If you're talking about it, they're on it. Saturday Morning Live with Mark Brenne at 6:30 on CFAX 1070. Bringing you deeper into the story, Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. We are going to get to the Gian Gomeshi trial, but before that, the story earlier this week, sheriff and court clerk shortage causing cases to be delayed. What's going on, delay or not?
Yes, that's been a problem now for some time. What's going on is that the province has failed to hire and retain a sufficient number of sheriffs in court and court clerks. And the root cause of that is that they're not paying them adequately, so they're having problems with hiring and retention. That came to a head over the last week with two courtrooms in Victoria having to be shut down, one for a lack of a sheriff and another for a lack of a court clerk. The premier clerk, actually, there's a quote from her here saying, "And we have to make sure our justice system is working, so the Attorney General is dealing with this issue. I'll be speaking to him about it again today," she said on Tuesday. Now, that was a Tuesday in June of 2011.
She's going to speak to whom?
No, that's what she said about this problem in June of 2011.
Gotcha.
So we're now sitting several years later, and this problem continues. And as I said, the root cause of it is that the province simply hasn't hired enough court staff in order to make things function. And they have a hard time doing that because, you know, what they're paying a sheriff, for example, is roughly half of what you can make as a constable, as a police officer with the City of Victoria. So it should come as no surprise that we don't have enough staff to man courts, which is a total false economy because it means you have judges, lawyers, Crown, witnesses, all these people all lined up to do things. And for lack of a court clerk or sheriff, they're unable to do their job. So it's a terrible administration.
CFAX 1070's Frank Stanford reached out to the Attorney General's Ministry. They deny that there is a staff shortage issue at the Victoria or other courthouses in the province.
Well, that's simply false. The thing seems to work right on the margin, which means that if you have somebody who's sick or somebody who can't come in for some reason, it doesn't function. I was in court in Port Alberni this week, earlier this week, and there was a problem there as well. We had a whole number of in-custodies show up. A trial had to be interrupted, and we were unable to use a remote judge to deal with all the in-custodies to keep things moving because there was no court clerk to clerk it and no additional sheriff to man that. So this isn't an isolated thing. It's not isolated to Victoria. The whole thing is just run right on the margin. So anytime you've got somebody away, vacation, sick, you have now, well, we saw twice in Victoria, courts going down for a lack of support staff.
The sexual assault trial of disgraced broadcaster Gian Gomeshi, salacious with lots of twists. Get us up to speed.
Well, that's a great description of it. There was the first witness in the sexual assault case to testify just the other day. One of the key elements of her evidence was that she claimed that following the assault, or what she says was an assault, it was so traumatizing that she would have to avoid Mr. Gomeshi, not listen to anything that came on the radio. She said repeatedly that she would have no contact with him and avoid anything after what she says was this assault. She emphatically denied that right up to the point where defense counsel showed her two different emails she sent to him, one a year after the alleged assault and one in a year after the year and a half after the alleged assault. The first one begins with, "Dear Playboy, good to see you again. Your show is still great. When you take a break from plowing snow naked, take a look at www.blankedout.com. If you search, you'll find the video Blank and I did. The song is okay, has a T-Rex flavor to it. If you want to keep in touch, this is my email," bunch of exclamation points. And then that didn't produce the contact apparently she wanted. So then a few months later, sent another email saying that she'd been watching the show that he'd been on and included a picture of her in a bikini, asking again for contact. Amusingly, that one at the bottom was from Yahoo, apparently, where Yahoo's inserted an ad talking about Yahoo's Canadian personals. So obviously the search engine is figuring out what somebody might be interested in. There was a follow-up on this today when counsel for various media outlets were applying for to have the photograph of the complainant in the bikini that was attached to the email she sent to the accused released. The starting point in a criminal case is that the process is an open one and exhibits are presumptively open to the public to look at. That principle runs up against a presumptive ban on publication of anything that might identify a complainant in a sexual assault case like this. So there was a debate in court today about whether this picture ought to be released or not. Interestingly, in the course of that, these submissions, as reported, indicate that it was a professionally taken picture with a large number of people present to take the photograph. So it sounds like the complainant, whose identity is secret, is somebody who would have pictures taken by large groups of people of her in a bikini. In any case, the judge declined to release the bikini picture to the media, so we don't have that. We have instead we do have the email messages and at least that description of what it was.
What do the bikini picture and the emails do for her case?
They would appear to seriously undermine her credibility. I mean, the fact that there's a picture of somebody in a bikini has nothing on its own to do with anything, but the reason they're so damning is that the sending of the emails of this sort contradicts what she said clearly was her state of mind, not having contact with them, said claimed to be traumatized by him, not wanting to have any communication with them. It furthered damaging to her credibility because plainly she didn't tell the police about this attempt to get in touch with him again, plainly didn't tell Crown Counsel about it, was not mentioned in various media interviews she conducted, and then she purported that somehow this wasn't in her memory and she was trying to bait him, was her explanation. The reports are that she was going beet red when these things were put to her, so it just seriously undermines her credibility because it's inconsistent with the story that she's told.
How could this impact other witnesses? The trailer park actress is on the witness stand as we speak in the sexual assault trial. I mean, how might this taint this case going forward, or is it just one element?
It would have a few possible impacts. First of all, the Crown, as I understand it, is relying on similar fact evidence, saying that, look, these three different people all make similar allegations. If the credibility of the at least one of them is seriously impaired, that submission isn't going to have nearly the same weight. Also, interestingly, this morning, the reports were that the trailer park actress, I think she's also a captain in the Air Force, she apparently presented Crown with a brand new statement about what she says happened. So court had to be delayed for an hour while the Crown reviewed her new statement and provided that to defense counsel. Now, we don't know what was in the statement. We may well find out when she's cross-examined this afternoon. But given the media attention that the cross-examination of the first complainant has garnered, you're left to wonder whether the second complainant was compelled to provide some information she hadn't previously chosen to reveal. And in her direct examination, one of the things which apparently the Crown spent some time on with her was a discussion of email exchanges between her and Mr. Gomeshi. And those email exchanges apparently had sexual content in terms of sort of sexual positions and things that they were wanting to do. So it may be that witness or complainant number two decided that given how things played out for complainant number one, that being some being forthcoming about the actual communication that went on was a wiser approach than denying it. Up to the point where she was actually confronted with having done something that she had previously denied.
How would Jiang Gomeshi's lawyer feel right now based on all this?
Well, I think she it's hard to know how she feel how she's feeling today, but it seems to me following that cross-examination the other day, it was a devastatingly effective one. We should be feel lucky to live in a place where a country where these sort of allegations can be properly examined and challenged like this, because this is a witness, the first one, who had made various statements to the media, had been interviewed, had come to court and testified, and these things were just not revealed by her. She told a story which was inconsistent with what plainly she did.
Is the case unraveling?
Well, for that witness, it sure seems to be. Remembering, of course, the Crown's got to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a very high standard to which they are held. And if you've got a complainant like the at least the first complainant, who appears to have testified untruthfully, at least in a seriously incomplete fashion, indirect, they're going to have challenges with that.
Where is this case headed now? How much longer do we have to go here?
Apparently, there are three complainants. The first one with the email exchange is complete. The second complainant, the only one whose identity can be revealed, the actress and Air Force captain, she's finished testifying in direct for the Crown, and this afternoon she'll be cross-examined. So it will be fascinating to see whether where her credibility winds up after her evidence has been tested, like the first complainant's credibility was tested.
Once again, a brilliant show. You're unmatched in that area and your humor. Thanks so much for all your research and for being on the air every week with me.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Mulligan.